Wednesday, December 10th, 2014. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer, coming to you from the Mile High City that is Denver, Colorado. And we are back. We are back. Excited to be back. You may have listened to the Daily Dose previously in a different format. We are going to try to get this podcast going and do it bigger and better. Trying to work up maybe some guests, bring on some different people, maybe work in some phone calls, a few different things. As usual, as you have come to expect, we will talk sports. We'll bring you the stories that you want to hear, you know, with a little different outlook that you get here at the Daily Dose. Being in Denver, of course, we do talk sports with a little bit of a Colorado flavor, but as usual. You know, we're going to touch on the stories that you want to hear, the biggest stories, and the best part about doing the podcast, the part of it that I'm most excited about, I guess, is you can listen to it when you want to. You know, whether that's you're working out, you're out walking your dog, you're driving, whatever it is, you can go download the podcast off of iTunes, listen to it when it's convenient for you, and we're just going to try to get them up every single Wednesday. So on Wednesdays, we'll get the podcast up. You can go to it, download it, a few different ways you can get it, and I'll make sure to give you those as we go. But you can go to iTunes, you can just search Daily Dose, and you can find the podcast, download it, and we'll get you all that information. Hey, if you would like to contact me, first and foremost, before we jump in, we've got a lot of things to get to. Haven't been on the air here in a couple months, so we've got a lot of things to get to. But if you would like to contact me, Clint Daly, the host, you can reach out to me. Twitter handle is at DailyDose22. Daily is D-A-L-Y. Don't throw those extra vowels in there. I don't want them. DailyDose22, you can find me on Twitter. You know, on Twitter, a lot of times, breaking news I'll try to give you. I'll give you updates to some of my sports articles and some of the things that I do. As well as, you know, if there's a big game or if there's a big event, I'm going to be on there, you know, commenting and giving you a little bit of feedback and some of my thoughts on it. Facebook. You can also find me on Facebook if that's easier for you. Facebook, you can find me at cd.daily.dose. Maybe you're like me. When I first joined Facebook, and I joined back, I think it was still called the Facebook back in the day. But when you first join Facebook, you're like, oh, well, you know, I can keep up with maybe some people I went to school with, or I can keep up with maybe some of the people I grew up with. But, you know, the bulk of my Facebook feed that I see coming up, here's mostly what I see. I see a lot of, people that I maybe used to work with or something, and like their third great aunt is getting remarried or something. Something I don't care about. I see a lot of the people that I grew up with don't know how to read or apparently spell very well. I see a lot of that. And then it seems like you always get at least like, hey, you grew up with me, and here's some of my views, and here's like a really racist article. I get a lot of that stuff on Facebook. If you're tired of that nonsense on Facebook, and I know that I am, you want to make sure you add the Daily Dose to your Facebook feed, because we'll give you something a little bit better. We'll give you some of the breaking news stories. I'll give you some of the things that maybe you're not going to see. And again, try to minimize some of the nonsense that you get with Facebook. I've reached a point with Facebook, honestly, where I just, it's all I can do to get through a full Facebook feed without just being disgusted and going, oh my goodness, are you kidding me? So, if you want to, liven up your Facebook, give you something a little bit different, give you something a little more sports oriented, again, cd.daily.dose, you can find us there. Today on the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, we've got a lot of things to get to. Got a ton of things to get to. We've got NFL news. We've got some Denver Broncos we're going to talk. Going to talk a little bit about the NCAA football playoff that we have coming up. That's really, really exciting. Got some cool stuff there. Bowls have been released. We'll touch on those a little bit. Might get to some NBA if we have time. And as usual, a very favorite subject and segment of the Daily Dose show, the Daily Dose top five. You don't want to miss that. You want to make sure you stick around for that one. It is a little bit of NFL flavored today. You want to make sure you stick around for the Daily Dose top five. Couple breaking stories we'll get to, and just a couple things just to keep in mind. Want to throw them out to you. That are coming down the news line right now. The Chicago Cubs went and signed John Lester and paid him, it looks like, $155 million, 6 years. No way that a pitcher over the age of 30 signing him to a long-term deal, there's no way that goes bad, right? That's just going to go perfect. We know Lester's going to come in. He's just going to be wheeling a deal. And there's no... yeah, that's probably not going to go well at all for the Cubs. I like the, you know, they went and got Joe Maddon. They've got some, you know, some pull now with a good manager there, but you're still the Chicago Cubs, and signing Lester to that big of a deal, I somehow don't see that going quite that well. Hey, we had some kind of scary news yesterday. You know, you heard Carolina Panthers quarterback Cam Newton was injured in a car crash. And you know, when I first heard that, my initial reaction was, oh, fender bender, you know, no big deal. And then I saw the pictures. They were showing the pictures on Twitter of Cam Newton and you know, his truck he had, and it looked like it was, you know, completely crushed and it was flat. And I started going, wait a second, is this guy okay? It looks like he's got two fractures in his lower back after that accident that he had. It's really interesting to me, though, because if this was someone you knew, if this was mom or dad or brother or a guy at work, your first question would not be, well, when can you get back to work? That is our first question with Cam Newton. The very first question we have is, okay, was he going to miss games? What do we got going? Is he out? Come on, Tony Romo, you know, fought through this. Can he do this? It sounds like a similar injury to what Tony Romo had. Romo missed one game for this injury, but they haven't given a timetable yet on Cam Newton. The bad thing, we're going to talk about this here in just a little bit. The bad thing is that the Carolina Panthers are, bizarrely, strangely, in a playoff race, and they really need him. So it's going to be interesting to see. But you do, I guess we've got to just be thankful that Newton and the passengers involved, I guess, are okay. Non-life-threatening injuries is what they said between the driver of the other vehicle and, of course, Newton. But still kind of scary when it gets into that. I think that's the only scenario that we jump right in and say, okay, when are you getting back to work? If his name is Cameron and he's in sales and he gets in a crash where he flips his vehicle, there's no way we're saying, hey, is Cameron in sales going to be back tomorrow? Because he needs to be here. We've got a playoff push we're trying to get to. Hey, let's jump in and start talking just a little bit. Want to touch on the Denver Broncos a little bit. Obviously, locally here in Denver, we're going to touch on the Broncos. The Denver Broncos, struggling a little bit on offense lately. They are getting the wins the last 2 weeks, but they are last 3 weeks. But the last 2 weeks, they've really, really struggled offensively. And it's, you know, it's kind of weird. Because it's something we didn't exactly see coming. The struggle that we've seen from this team has been the defense, at times the special teams, the offensive line, the run game. The struggles we are seeing the last 2 weeks have been Peyton Manning, which I don't think we ever expected to see. Last 2 weeks, he is averaging 176 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. Now, the Broncos are winning with this running game. And with their defense, because in these games, their defense is giving up just 16 points a game. That's how they're getting away with this. But isn't it kind of strange that of all the weaknesses that you would see in this team, and I'm not quite sold that this is completely a weakness just yet. I'm not quite there yet. But Peyton Manning has struggled. I think there's a couple of things that are going on and a couple things that are at play in this situation that we're seeing with the Denver Broncos. First off, this may actually help the Denver Broncos going into the playoffs. It certainly looks like, and we're going to break down the playoff picture here in just a few minutes, but it certainly looks like the Denver Broncos could be heading to New England for a playoff game at some point, or at least that is a possibility, and that is out there. If that is the case, I think understanding how to have a running game, win with running game, win with defense, win with ball control, I think that helps them down the road. You never know what you're going to have, especially in New England, which is where it looks like they'd play. But even if it was here in Denver, bad weather, wind, cold, can Peyton grip the ball? All those things that can go into that. Here's my concern. I don't know if Peyton Manning is healthy right now. I know that we see his passes fluttering a lot right now. But, you know, I went back and I was looking at some of those games back when he was, remember when he was with the Indianapolis Colts, and he seemed like every year in the playoffs, the Broncos would face him and he'd, you know, go for like 400 yards and five touchdowns against the Broncos. I went back and looked. His passes are fluttering then. It's not so much, he just doesn't throw a real pretty pass. He doesn't throw that Aaron Rodgers, Dan Marino tight spiral. He just doesn't. It kind of flutters. It's just really, really accurate. The thing that I think is coming into play here with the Broncos, though, and Bill Belichick kind of came up with this defense back in those days to try to limit Peyton Manning. You know what they do is they drop those two safeties back back deep, and then they drop eight defenders total into coverage, and they kind of allow the run to a certain extent. And they're not going to let Peyton Manning beat you. Remember when the Broncos went to New England to face the Patriots last year? I think that was like a November game, windy, cold, miserable game. Remember the Broncos actually ran for 280 yards in that game. No, Sean Moreno had a huge day. He had like 204 yards or something. Peyton Manning threw for just 150. That is the Bill Belichick kind of plan. We're going to drop everybody back into coverage. Do you have the running game? And will, and this is the key, will you stick with that running game in order to beat us? And I think we've seen in the past, I don't know that Peyton Manning or the offensive coordinator, whether that was Marsh Broder or that's Adam Gase or whoever that is, I don't know that they've fully been committed to saying, okay, then we're just going to stick with the run game. We're going to control the ball. We're going to control the clock, and we're going to run it right down your throat. I don't think they've done that until this year. Maybe that's been dictated. Maybe Peyton's not healthy. Maybe that's the one thing we don't know, is that Peyton's not fully healthy, and so he finally is saying, okay, well, then I guess we're just going to run it. Remember, it was just about a month ago that the Broncos didn't always adjust that well. Remember when they faced the St. Louis Rams? The Rams were running that four-man pass rush. And with that four-man rush, they were getting all the pressure they needed. In fact, they didn't even have to rush the full four. Sometimes they were rushing with three and still getting to Peyton. And Peyton, instead of saying, okay, then we're just going to run it, Peyton said, okay, we're just going to throw it anyways. I know you're dropping into coverage. We're just going to throw it. Peyton Manning threw the ball 54 times. And the Broncos lost that game 22-7. I think the light may have gone on in that game. Or maybe Peyton got hit in that game and said, you know what, that's about enough of that. But either way, I think the Broncos are starting to see that if teams are going to play that way, that they have the run game now to grind people down, to wear people down. And you've started to see that the last, you know, 2-3 weeks, where we're starting to see, you know, guys like CJ Anderson come in and totally dominate a game. Now, CJ worried me just a little bit in this Buffalo game. I give Buffalo a lot of credit. Buffalo's got a very, very stout defense. Don't underestimate that defense. But you're starting to see CJ Anderson comes in, Jawan Thompson comes in, and they're just going to run and grind teams down and grind teams down and grind teams down. And eventually, you start to see, okay, now you have some play action stuff. I think the thing that is catching everybody kind of off guard is that Peyton Manning looks like, when he does get the chance to throw, his passes don't look very accurate. Of course, they never have a spiral to them. They're always ducks, but they're accurate ducks. I think the problem that we see is that Peyton is such a rhythm passer. I think when they're running the ball all day and run after run after run, and they're running the ball sometimes 35, 40 times these last few weeks, I think Peyton fails to get into any kind of a rhythm. And as a result, that's why you kind of see him struggle. I think he's going to have to adjust and do a little bit better job and get to where he can say, okay, we can hand off the ball, we can run the ball, and we can attack you in these ways. But when I do get the chance to throw, I've got to make the most of it and try to find a rhythm. It's a little bit different. But it reminds me, it takes me actually back a little bit to remember when the Denver Broncos back in 95, 96, you started to see John Elway was starting to come down. He was on the backside of his career, and Terrell Davis was starting to come up. You started to see that switch, and you started to see Elway take a step back and say, okay, I'm just going to learn how to hand the ball to Terrell, and when it's my opportunity, then I've got to make the most of the opportunities that I get, because I can still hurt you. I can still beat you. But this is basically going to be on Terrell Davis' shoulders. I think that's what we're starting to see with Peyton Manning. I think he is starting to slowly step back and okay, hey, CJ Anderson, you're going to have to come and get it. We've got Ronnie Hillman coming back from injury. We've possibly got Monte Ball coming back from injury. He's got some weapons on the offensive side of the ball. I think he's got to, you know, have to start learning how to step back. And when he does get his opportunity, when he is asked to pick up these third and five, third and sevens, well, then you're going to have to step up and make some plays. Hey, this week, the 10-3 Denver Broncos will face the 8-5 San Diego Chargers in San Diego. Broncos are up two games. They've got three games remaining. Remember that the Broncos and Chargers met in week 8. And the Broncos won 35-21 in that game. Broncos actually, and again, this was before kind of this commitment to the run, but the Broncos outrushed San Diego in that game 139 yards to 61. Then you had Phillip Rivers and San Diego kind of turn it over a few times. I think Rivers had two picks in that game. Ronnie Hillman had 109 rushing yards on just 20 carries. He was getting 5.5 yards a pop. So, you know, going into San Diego, tough game because, you know, San Diego's against the wall. They've got to get a win to stay in the playoff hunt. Denver's got to go in there and take care of the football. Can't have the turnovers that you had this past week against Buffalo. If they do that and they continue to run the ball, I think they are at least in pretty decent shape to get a win, but you know you're going to get San Diego's best shot. Doesn't Phillip Rivers, and some of you may not be old enough to know this, doesn't Phillip Rivers kind of remind you of just, he's kind of the modern day Dave Craig? When he's good, he's so, so good. He's so dangerous. And when he's bad, he's so awful. And he has those games where he has two or three. I mean, remember the Miami game when they got beat like 37-0? That was just a few weeks back. Rivers looked like he couldn't do anything right. He just reminds me of Dave Craig from a few years. And I don't know if I've ever heard this term applied more to one guy, a courageous effort in a losing cause. You know, what a courageous game, and they lost. But what a courageous game by Rivers. He's had more courageous games in losses. He should have some courageous games in wins every once in a while. What I want to look at real quick is I want to take a look at, because we've got three games left in the NFL season, and I want to kind of take a look around the league. I don't want to go through and break down every game, but I want to kind of take a look at the playoff races that are going on around the NFL right now, because we've got some really, really huge games coming up, and we've got some playoff races that if you look at the standings, the current standings right now, they don't quite tell the whole story of exactly what's going on. Let me give you an example. Starting in the NFC East, you've got Philly and Dallas tied at 9-4 right now, and they play this week in Philadelphia. Can Philadelphia and Mark Sanchez get a win that most likely will propel them to win that NFC East division? Because following that game, Philly's got at Washington and at New York, you know, the Giants. And I know the Giants always play tough, at least tougher up there. I think Coughlin's probably on his way out. But that looks like a very, very winnable slate for Philadelphia if they were to get this win. If Dallas were to win it, they are at home against Indianapolis Colts, a dangerous team, and then they're at Washington. Washington being the dumpster fire that they are right now, I don't think anyone's afraid of going into Washington. This game on Sunday is basically for a playoff spot. Is basically for the NFC East division. We're looking at basically a playoff game this Sunday in Philadelphia. Should be a lot of fun. I think Philly's going to get that just because it's at home. But again, I'm looking at Mark Sanchez. You're going to somehow lead this team. Anyways, let's look at the NFC North. Green Bay is a full game ahead of Detroit in this. They are at Buffalo, at Tampa, and then they are hosting Detroit at home. Worst case scenario, they're not going to lose three. I think they'll probably win all three of those games. Worst case scenario, I see them maybe dropping one of those. Detroit has Minnesota at Chicago and at Green Bay. Worst case scenario, Green Bay is hosting that last game for the NFC North. I think Green Bay probably wins all three of those and finishes 13-3 on the season. The NFC South, speaking of dumpster fires, you're going to get one of these teams out of the NFC South into the playoffs. And I don't know if any of them, I don't think, why do we still, it's so strange. We have this NFL, modern day league, you know, modernized league and all these things. And we still kind of pick the best teams based on geography, not based on what you do on the field. It's so strange. It's so bizarre. The NFC South, you have Atlanta and New Orleans are both at 5-8. And then you have Carolina, who is sitting at 4-8-1 because of that tie that they have. When you look at this and you say, well, Atlanta 5-8, they look, you know, decent, I guess, in garbage time against Green Bay. But look at Atlanta's schedule. They've got Pittsburgh, who I don't have any idea who Pittsburgh is. They are one of the most schizophrenic teams going. At New Orleans, and then home against Carolina. That is not an easy stretch for Atlanta. I think Atlanta has some problems unless they finally figure this out finally, which I don't exactly believe that they have. They have so many offensive weapons, and it just seems like they're not getting nearly enough out of them. New Orleans is at Chicago, Atlanta at home, and at Tampa. To me, New Orleans looks like they've probably got the easiest slate. And then you have Carolina, Tampa, Cleveland, and at Atlanta. Carolina, Maybe they have the easiest group of last three games, but we don't know the situation with Cam Newton. And even if he does play, we don't know how healthy he truly is. Would you be okay with, who's their backup, David Anderson or something? I don't know that I'm going to put a lot of faith in that. That looks to me like New Orleans probably has the easiest ride of all those teams. And if New Orleans gets in, they're getting in probably at 8-8, maybe 7-9. They're going to be hosting a playoff game. Can we just start? I understand the divisions. I get it. You play these teams more often because they're closer to you in proximity. We don't have, you know, the time zones and all that kind of, I understand it. Once the playoffs start, can we just seed them 1-6? Because getting somebody in the NFC is probably going to be sitting at 10-6, maybe 11-5. They're going to get left out of the playoffs this year. And we see it happen year after year. And the worst part, you'll probably see New Orleans or Atlanta or whichever one of these teams gets in. They're probably going to win that first playoff game because that's just how the NFL goes. Out West. Right now in first place, you have Arizona at 10-3. Here's the problem. Their next three games are at St. Louis, home against Seattle, and at San Francisco. There is a chance. I'm not saying they will. There's a chance they lose all three of those. I would not want to face the St. Louis Rams right now. That is a dangerous, dangerous team right now. They are playing with nothing to lose. They're not going to make the playoffs. Once again, they're going to be one of those teams that finishes right around 7-9, and we say, man, they look really good for next year, and then next year they'll be awful to start the season again. But I would not want to face the St. Louis Rams right now. That would scare me just a little bit. Seattle is sitting next at 9-4, and they are home against San Francisco, at Arizona, and home against St. Louis. That, to me, looks like it's a lot easier than what Arizona has to do going to San Francisco and to St. Louis. I think Seattle ends up winning the West. Have you noticed that suddenly, you remember at the beginning of the season, we saw Seattle, and Seattle looked like the greatest team again. They were coming back. They were Super Bowl champs. They were defending their title. And Seattle looked like the team to beat. And then we kind of started to see, you know, they missed Golden Tate on offense. And then they traded away Percy Harvin. And you know what? They just don't have much offensive firepower. And they still don't. Their offense right now is basically a handoff, you know, to Marshawn Lynch, let him go beast mode. And then Russell Wilson, I don't know, run around and do something and try to create something because we don't have much else. But did you notice the thing that stands out to me is that, remember at the beginning of the year, they were calling all those defensive holding, the pass interference, the illegal contact down the field. We were seeing a lot of those calls. And as the season has progressed, slowly we've started to see less and less of those calls. And just coincidentally, suddenly Seattle is right in the thick of it and looks like could be a very, very dangerous team if they get into the playoffs. Now, if they have to go on a road, I know Seattle is not quite the same team on the road. But with that defense, and you know in the playoffs, they're not going to call everything. They're not. We've seen that in the past. We saw that last year. They say, oh yeah, we're gonna make sure we don't have... They get in the playoffs, and the refs kind of go, okay, let the players decide it. You know, we can't call everything. And Seattle, what Seattle basically does is they say, okay, hey, we're going to play the way we play. And if you want to throw a flag on every play, then I guess you're going to be busy. And you're going to have to stop the game an awful lot. We're going to have a four-hour game here. I don't think you're going to call every one of them. And the ones you don't call, we're going to get away with and we're going to be okay with. I think Seattle is starting to get a little bit scary. I don't know how they're going to do in the playoffs, but they're starting to get a little bit scary. If this breaks down, like I've just laid out, and who knows if it will, but I don't think it's far off, you would basically be sitting with Green Bay at 1, Philadelphia at 2, Seattle at 3, New Orleans at 4, and then Detroit and Dallas at 5-6. Your first round games would be Detroit at New Orleans to get to go play Philadelphia. And your other wild card game would be the Dallas Cowboys at Seattle to go play Green Bay. Some very, very interesting scenarios playing out in the NFC on that side. Let's switch over and let's take a look at the AFC real quick. New England sitting at 10-3. They've got a couple of home games against Miami and Buffalo, and then at the Jets, where Rex Ryan looks like he is on his way out, probably going to the broadcast booth after this season. New England sitting at 10-3, and I think they probably win all three of those games. If they were at Miami or at Buffalo, I would at least give them a chance. I don't give them much of a chance. Unless New England is resting people, I think they win all three of these games. Miami is still in the hunt, and they're trying to get in, but the problem with Miami, they've got to go to New England. That could drop them down. They're sitting at 7-6. That could drop them down to 500 right there. Then they do have Minnesota and the Jets at home, but you're probably looking at 9-7 for Miami. The Buffalo Bills have such a tough stretch. They started off looking strong. Maybe this was finally the year they were going to get back in the playoffs. Keep in mind, the Buffalo Bills have not made the playoffs, I believe, since 1999 when they lost in the Music City Miracle. Buffalo sitting at 7-6. They've got Green Bay at home, and then they go to Oakland, which, bizarrely, might not be as much of a pushover as you would think. And then they go to New England. Buffalo just has too tough of a stretch. I can't see them getting but maybe one win out of that. If things go as they are, New England is probably going to clinch the number one overall seed at 13-3. The division that is most interesting to me in the AFC is the North. You've got Cincinnati at 8-4. You've got Pittsburgh at 8-4, and you've got Baltimore at 8-5. Is that right? Baltimore is at 8-5. Pittsburgh's at 8-5 too. Sorry, and Cincinnati's at 8-4-1. And so you've got three teams, and Cleveland's just a game back at 7-6. You've got three, four teams, maybe all of them. You could conceivably have Cleveland somehow play their way in, and it's there for them. Here's Cincinnati's schedule. Cincinnati is sitting at 8-4-1. They are at Cleveland, home against Denver, and at Pittsburgh. That's a little bit scary if I'm Cincinnati. I don't like the way their defense is playing, and we know Andy Dalton, the Red Rifle, it tends to not maybe have his best games when, you know, the money's on the line. I don't know if I have much faith in Cincinnati, and they're sitting in first place right now. I don't know if they're going to struggle to make the playoffs. They're going to struggle to get in. Pittsburgh, I think, has probably a tough schedule too. Pittsburgh is at Atlanta. That should be a win. Kansas City at home should be a win. Cincinnati at home, maybe that's a win. They could be sitting at 10-5, maybe 11-5, somewhere like that. They're right in the thick of it. Here's Baltimore, though. I think Baltimore is the team in the North that actually is going to win this division. Baltimore sitting at 8-5. They are home against Jacksonville, at Houston, and Cleveland at home. Those are three winnable games. I think Baltimore gets to 11-5. And then you have Cleveland, and I know, we're probably not going to say, hey, this week they did announce Johnny Manziel is going to start for Cleveland. You had to start him. Brian Hoyer has looked dreadful the last few weeks. Johnny Football is going to come in. We'll see what he can do. Can you imagine if Johnny Manziel somehow led Cleveland into the playoffs? I mean, look at their schedule. They are home against Cincinnati this week. They beat up on Cincinnati the first time. They are at Carolina. We don't know what kind of Carolina team we're going to get. We don't know if we're going to have Cam Newton or not. Carolina is not an overwhelming tough team anyways. And then they're at Baltimore. That at Baltimore game could depend, see who that could determine who gets the division. Can you imagine if Johnny Manziel somehow led this Cleveland team into the playoffs? It would be like Tebow mania when he was here in Denver. I mean, people would lose their minds. It would be very, very Tebow-esque, probably a few less prayers and probably a lot more keg stands, but still, it would be very, very similar to that. People would lose their minds. I don't know if Johnny Football can play at this level. I want to find out, though, and I'll be honest, I'm entertained by him. I don't know how he's going to do. Did you notice last week, Saturday was his birthday. Did you notice, I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, he's holding the clipboard on the sideline. And Johnny Clipboard, I thought maybe he had a Bloody Mary sitting behind that clipboard. I don't know. I couldn't tell for sure, but it looked like he might have. Let's look at the AFC South. Indy is two games ahead of Houston. Indy is sitting at 9-4. Indy is back at 7-6. I think this is Indy's. They've got a little bit of a... They're Houston at home. They're at Dallas, and then they're at Tennessee. They're going to win two of those games, aren't they? I mean, maybe if that game was in Houston, I would give Houston a shot. But Houston right now is kind of on the let's somehow win an MVP for J.J. Watt. And don't get me wrong, J.J. Watt's a phenomenal player. amazing player. Maybe he is the most valuable player, but if you don't get into the playoffs, I don't think you can win that award. They're trying. They're kind of doing... it reminds me of when Michigan had Charles Woodson and they started putting him in on offense and let's have him return kicks and let's have him, you know, punt a few times. I don't know. Whatever we can do, we're going to try to win him the Heisman. That's kind of feels like what Houston's doing. We don't really have anything else to you know, pin our name to, so let's put it on J.J. Watt and... I don't know. Maybe we'll have him take a few snaps at quarterback. We're going to try to, you know, win him the MVP. I think Indy's going to walk away with that division. Worst case scenario, they go 1-3 in these last few games, and they're still going to win the division. Out in the AFC West, you've got Denver sitting at 10-3. Their last three games are not gimmies, though. They go to San Diego this week. They go to Cincinnati the next week, and then they are home against Oakland. I kind of get the feeling that what Denver is hoping to do, they want to beat San Diego and kind of clinch the division. And then I wouldn't be surprised in that last week against Oakland if they're resting Peyton Manning. That would not shock me a bit to see Denver do that. Behind them, you've got San Diego at two games back. So Denver has a two-game lead with three to go. And you know you have Oakland at home, final game of the season, if nothing else. Denver is in pretty good shape as far as the division, but... What Denver has to keep in mind and what you know that they're focused on is that difference between a number two seed in the AFC and a number three seed is a bye week. And I can't imagine that a bye week would be something that they wouldn't want to have for Peyton Manning and you know, resting him, whatever's wrong with him, if there is anything wrong with him, I don't know. But I can't imagine, you know, keep in mind they've had other injuries. They've got, you know, Julius Thomas is still injured, their best tight end. You've had offensive linemen have been dinged up here and there. Their linebackers, obviously, Danny Trevathan is supposed to be back this week. Nate Irving is still dinged up. They've had some injuries. I know the Denver Broncos are very, very in tune with they want that bye week. They don't have to be the one seed to get it. They can be the two seed, but they desperately need that bye week. San Diego is sitting at 8-5, and they don't have an easy schedule. San Diego has Denver this week, and then they go to San Francisco and to Kansas City, both, you know, dangerous teams also fighting for playoff spots. And then you have Kansas City, another game back at 7-6. They have Oakland at Pittsburgh, and then, of course, they host San Diego at the end. I think Denver gets in, and I don't think any other teams from the AFC West are going to get in. I think it's just going to be too tough. If this goes the way it kind of looks like it could, New England would be your number one seed. Denver would be your two. Indianapolis would be the three. I think Baltimore is your four seed at 11-5. And then I think Pittsburgh and Cincinnati scrape their way in. If that is how this all laid out, your wild card weekend would be Pittsburgh at Baltimore to go to New England. That's a tough game, and those two teams cannot stand each other. On the other side, you would have Cincinnati at Indianapolis. Winner would go to Denver. Some interesting scenarios to look at in the NFL and some kind of fun things to keep in mind as we get down to it. We'll kind of see how that all shakes out. But, you know, we've got three games left, and it is starting to get tight in the NFL. Some interesting scenarios that we're going to see, and then you start, you know, getting into matchups and who matches up well with this team and who matches up well with that team. Hey, let's plow ahead and move on to NCAA football. This past week on Sunday, I know y'all saw they announced the playoff committee announced the first. I've been waiting for this since I was a little kid. The first NCAA football Division I playoff, and they came out. With these four teams, and I know there's some controversy. We'll touch on it briefly. Number one seed overall, they gave it to Alabama, who had beat Missouri pretty handily in the SEC championship game. Number two went to Oregon, who had beat Arizona in the Pac-12 championship. Number three went to Florida State, who had beat Georgia Tech. I don't know if it was convincingly, but nothing Florida State has done all year has been convincingly, but they did beat Georgia Tech. And then number four, they gave it as opposed to a TCU or a Baylor, they went with Ohio State. Now, Ohio State has been impressive. They beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship 59-0. They're on their third string quarterback. A lot of different things. You know, TCU had been sitting at three last week, and then they got bumped back to six. I believe Baylor was sitting at five, and I think they were left at five. The Big 12 gets shut out. The Big 12 completely gets shut out. Now, here's a couple thoughts on that. First off, they ask the Big 12 commissioner, what happens if both of these teams, because both TCU and Baylor had one loss, TCU had actually lost to Baylor head to head. He said, "What will you do if you've got that tie?" Because the Big 12 doesn't have a championship game. They don't have enough teams. They only have 10 teams. The Big 12 has 10 teams. Yeah. See if you can make sense out of that one. Maybe they should switch and be the Big 10. I don't know. Anyways, I'm just trying to help people. So the Big 12 said, "Well, we don't want to just declare one champion. What we want to do is we're hoping." What they were hoping for. "We're not going to declare a champion. They're just going to be co-champions." Well, okay. What they were hoping for is they were hoping someone like Florida State or Oregon or Alabama, one of those teams would drop. And if that was the case, it might open the door for both Baylor and TCU to get into that final playoff. Now, what happened was not only did no one drop, but three out of the four teams won convincingly, and then Florida State is the only team that's undefeated. So, I mean, what else do you do with Florida State? You have to kind of put them in. As a result, the Big 12 gets no one. Hey, you took a gamble. You took a gamble saying we're not going to declare a champion. It didn't pay off, and you lost. I understand it. You know, the interesting thing to me, I actually heard from a number of people on Twitter, a number of people, even just friends, saying, you know what, I don't like this system. Let's go back to the computers. Here's something interesting. The computers actually agreed with this selection. This is who the computers had too. The only difference was that they had Florida State, and then I think it went Florida State, Oregon, Alabama, and Ohio State. But there was the same four teams. You know, playing that conference championship gives you so much. It gives you one extra ranked opponent that totally overwhelms, in the computer's mind at least, anything else. And so the computers actually agreed with this. Kind of interesting. Couple things. First off, hey, Baylor had been screaming, "Hey, we should be ahead of TCU. We beat TCU head to head. We beat TCU head to head. Why are we not ahead of TCU?" Take heart, Baylor. At least you're ahead of TCU now. So, I mean, there's that. There's that. I understand you guys gambled and lost, and that's tough. Maybe they took Ohio State for the name. I don't know. Maybe just that strength of playing a conference championship. I don't know. But like I said, the computers agreed to it as well. One thing to keep in mind, and Ohio State, people in Columbus, I'm sure, were out partying and enjoying. We're into the playoffs. Somehow we're on our third quarterback, and somehow Urban Meyer has gotten this team into the playoff. And I give them a lot of credit for what they've done. I give Ohio State a ton of credit for playing their way in. The committee actually showed us you can improve and we will reward you for improving. I'm okay with that. Here's the bad news. Ohio State, you're on your third string quarterback and you've got Nick Saban with about a month and a half to get ready for him. So yes, you're in. And also, good luck, because that Alabama defense is nasty. Have you noticed, I hate to bring this up, have you noticed Nick Saban's hair? Is he getting a spray can? His hair looks Crimson Tide color. I'm not sure that color is natural. I'm not sure that color is natural. And also, Les Miles down at LSU, his hair is changing. It's changing colors. You're in your 60s. You should be getting a little bit gray. But somehow they're changing to a foreign color that it's alien to me, and I don't know what that color is. But Nick Saban's hair looks Crimson Tide. Maybe it's just school spirit. I don't know. Maybe it's school spirit. The Big 12, you know, speaking of the Big 12 only having 10 teams right now, they need to add two more teams. And the reason I bring this up is because in order to have that conference championship, you've got to have at least 12 teams. They may be looking to add a couple teams to the Big 12. I think that's very much a possibility. And if that is the case, who do they add? Because you want to add a couple teams that maybe help you recruiting-wise without completely killing you. I don't know. I get the feeling like the Big 12, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them expand two more teams so they could have that conference championship, which then could propel them into this football playoff that we have. Couple teams to think about. Couple teams to think about. BYU. BYU is right now an independent. They feel to me like they might be a team that maybe we can add you. You're decent in football. You're decent in basketball. Maybe that's an addition. Geography-wise, it makes a little bit of sense. I just don't know if BYU has the cachet that they once did. Boise State, to me, makes a lot of sense moving to the Big 12. I think Boise, and I think Boise would be a very, very attractive team to the Big 12. Cincinnati, I think, makes a lot of sense because then I can get out east a little bit and expand my recruiting, kind of package out into the east a little bit. I think Cincinnati, and we don't bring them in and they suddenly take over the whole conference. Boise, I think, might scare them a little bit football-wise because they could come in and be winning championships. Cincinnati, we can take you. We can expand our footprint, and you're probably not going to beat us either. CSU. Colorado State might be a little bit attractive to the Big 12. I know they don't have the facilities, and I know that traditionally they have not proven to be, over the long haul, really, really solid. But CSU, I guess, geographically at least, makes some sense for the Big 12. And, you know, maybe someone like, Houston, someone like that, maybe they could get down into Texas more. Big 12's already in Texas with TCU and Baylor, so I can't imagine that they would care that much about Houston. Houston down there is more A&M country anyways. But, you know, something to think about. I think the Big 12 may look to expand a little bit. And if they do, a couple of those teams you might want to keep in mind. Hey, speaking of CSU, they obviously lost their head coach, Jim McElwain, to the University of Florida, went down there, big buyout involved, and then CSU gets to go down there and get 60 hung on them by the Gators. They're going to have to find someone to replace him. I imagine it's probably going to be their offensive coordinator, Dave Baldwin, but we'll see. Jim McElwain going to Florida, I think Jim McElwain might be a good coach. He might be a great coach, but I don't have any idea for sure. If I look at his record at CSU, and I know CSU is up there saying, "Well, did you see us this year? We went 10-2 or what?" Yeah, I know, but beating up on Tulsa and UC Santa Barbara or whoever it was, not that impressive. Looking at McElwain's 3 years up at Colorado State, beat exactly three teams over 500. Again, I don't know that he's not good. I'm not positive if he is good. He seems like a good family guy. He seems like a very good guy with the media. He's going to be very, very good in with the boosters and that kind of thing. I think he'll be okay down there. I don't know for sure how good he is. I can't tell. I know that I hope for the Gators' sake, hope they don't play Air Force. That might be a little bit rough. I hope they don't play University of Colorado because he didn't always beat them. We'll see what happens to CSU now. Talking about the bowl games and CSU, speaking of them, they will face Utah in the Las Vegas Bowl on December 20th. And then locally here in Colorado, Air Force will face Western Michigan in the Idaho Potato Bowl, also on December 20th. Yes, that is a real thing. I didn't just make that up. We're going to probably break down a few of the bowl games. And you know what? I'm not going to break them all. Next week, we'll touch on a few of these bowl games. I'll try to give you maybe some good bowl games to watch because there's so many. I feel like every kid gets a ribbon come bowl season, and I can't stand it. There's like 60-some teams. I think there's 30 bowl games now. It's a ridiculous amount, and it's way too many. It's way too many because most of these teams shouldn't be playing in a bowl game. Let's be real honest. But that's kind of where we're at. Every kid gets a ribbon and everybody gets to go to a bowl game. And you try to drum up some business for the local town. And that's why there's a bowl game in Idaho, Potato Bowl. Not anything that anybody really wants to watch. But I'll try to give you maybe some sneaky good bowl games to keep an eye on. Of course, we have the playoffs this year that should be very entertaining. I will be watching all three of those games. They'll be amazing. But the other games, I'll try to give you maybe next week a couple of the bowl games that you'll want to keep an eye on because there are a few of them out there. One last thing that we do need to touch on, and that is college football in the state of Colorado. I know CSU finished 10-2 and rah-rah. College football in Colorado, at least, not very good. And I think we saw once again, and this doesn't make any sense, but I've said it again and again. If you've listened to the Daily Dose in the past, you know my stance on this. The best college football program in the state of Colorado right now is a military academy. And that does not make any sense. And you can talk about CSU this year, but consistently, Air Force is the best college football program in the state of Colorado. It makes no sense to me. We've got to get this back to what it was because I remember the days when CU was contending for national championships. They were contending for Big 8, Big 12, whatever it was. Now it's Pac-12 championships. I remember CSU at least being in contention for the WAC or the Mountain West or whatever it was. And then Air Force was scrappy, but they were military academy. Right now it's flipped. Air Force is the best team CSU is next. They just don't schedule anybody. And then at the, and the thing about Air Force that's funny to me is Air Force could care less. All they care about is Army and Navy. They could care less about the other stuff on their schedule. It's really not that big to them. But, you know, whatever. College football in Colorado needs to improve. Whoever hears this, you have to know that that's the truth. Hey, let's move to the NBA just briefly. Got a couple more things to get to. This is the opening podcast. This is our very first podcast. I'm excited to have this. If you have any comments to me, make sure you hit me on Twitter at DailyDose22. Would love to hear from you. Let's touch on the NBA just really, really briefly before we get to our Daily Dose top five. We'll get to that in just 1 minute. NBA. Hey, the Cleveland Cavaliers are suddenly hot. LeBron James and company won their eighth in a row last night, knocking off Toronto. And you know, I've said this all along. The season is such a long season. I want to wait until we get to, you know, after the holidays, after the first of the year. Then you can kind of start seeing. We were seeing Cleveland really struggle early. And I think they're still struggling. They're really bad defensively. Cleveland is not a very, very good team defensively. I still think Kevin Love is still kind of trying to find exactly where he fits in. To me, and I know this might anger some people, to me, Kevin Love is kind of that sixth man. He comes in. If he's shooting well, let him fill it up. If he's not, get him back out because he's a liability defensively. He's okay. He's not as good as I think he got credit for last year. He's the big name free agent. Everybody wanted him. Oh, we got to have this guy. I'm not completely sold. I think he's still trying to find his spot. But the Cleveland Cavaliers will probably continue to get better. Like I said, they've won eight in a row. Let's see how that develops down the stretch. Because the NBA, it's such a long, long season. 82 games. Man, I wish we could just shorten that by about 20 games. Hey, Los Angeles Lakers GM Mitch Kupchak says, you had better come see the Lakers, Laker fans, this season or next season, because after that, Kobe's gone. Now, let me tell you what that is. That is wishful thinking, because I've got news for you. If you think for 1 second that Kobe Bryant is playing these two seasons with a garbage cast around him, and it, when they do finally build it back up in a couple years, when they can get out of some of these contracts that they're still paying on, and they finally have some money, if you think Kobe's going to leave after that, you're out of your mind. There's no way he's leaving after that. He's going to stick until he's 50 if he has to. So I think that's wishful thinking on Kupchak's part, but I get it. It's probably not going to happen. Hey, Magic Johnson, speaking of the Lakers, Magic Johnson says that the Lakers should be tanking right now, and he wants them to lose every game and try to get that better playoff spot. I understand what Magic is saying, and I don't know, hopefully Laker fans understand that as well. But I look at the same situation with the Denver Nuggets right now here in Colorado. I don't want you winning right now. I'm not saying necessarily I want you to tank, but I don't care if you lose most of these games. The problem with teams like this in this situation is they win just enough to keep them out of a good draft pick. And I think that's what Magic Johnson is saying there, is that go ahead and just tank it. Just go ahead and lose as many games as you can, because otherwise there are some good kids coming out in this NBA draft. There are some players and maybe some superstars coming out in this next year's NBA draft. Go ahead and feel free to lose all you want right now so that you can get some of those players. Hey, speaking of losing a lot, did you see the New York Knicks are now 4-19? They are exactly two games ahead of the Philadelphia 76ers, a team, by the way, who has basically said, we are tanking. We're trying to lose. The Knicks, I don't think they're tanking, but they're just two games ahead of Philadelphia. Remember when Mike Woodson was the huge problem with this team? There was a huge problem. Mike Woodson was the problem. Let's get rid of him, and let's bring in Derek Fisher. I don't know how that's working out. You've won four games. And that triangle seems to be really, really confusing, because you have won exactly four games this year, and a team in Philadelphia that is trying to lose isn't that far behind you. Carmelo, I don't even know what to... Keep in mind one thing. Keep this in mind. The bulk of that team in New York, George Karl had them in the playoffs. Yes, he had J.R. Smith. Yes, he had Carmelo Anthony. He had some of those players. He somehow got them in the playoffs. I think Derek Fisher is having a rough start. Again, we'll wait and see till after the new year, see how some of these things shake out into the new season. But we'll see how the NBA grades out. The Nuggets sitting back out of playoff contention, but just good enough to not get a draft pick. what's new. That's what that franchise does. Hey, let's get on to the final portion of our show this week. Thank you for joining us on the debut Daily Dose Sports Podcast. We are going to bring to you our Daily Dose Top 5. We do this every week, the Daily Dose Top 5 list, and you never know what you're going to get with the Top 5. You could get something informative, you could get some records, you could get this or that. A lot of times it's just some opinions, but the Daily Dose Top 5 this week we want to get to before we finish up here. Daily Dose Top 5 this week is the top five reasons that Peyton Manning is struggling right now. We talked about it a little bit early. You know, Peyton Manning the last couple weeks is having just a little bit of struggles. Even when he does have time, it seems like there are times he can't quite find, his accuracy. He's not quite throwing the ball as well as he has recently. What's really going on? What's really going on? And it's up to us here at the Daily Dose to bring you that information. So without further ado, we bring you the Daily Dose Top 5 Reasons Peyton Manning is Struggling Right Now. Number 5, is there a chance, and I don't know, that maybe he got a little too close to Kyle Orton in warmups this last week against Buffalo? I don't know, but if you stand too close to Uncle Rico, some of that might rub off on you, and maybe he caught whatever that is that Kyle Orton has because he kind of struggled in that game against Buffalo. So number 5, I think maybe he stood a little too close to Kyle Orton. Number 4, maybe Peyton Manning is just finally tiring out after years of carrying that big head around. I mean, have you seen that head? That hat size has got to be like 12 and a half. Maybe he's just wearing down. I mean, you see the forehead when the helmet comes off, the big bruise across the forehead. Might be tiring out. I don't know. It's a lot of luggage. It's a lot of luggage is what I'm saying. Number three, those passing lessons from Tim Tebow are not paying off yet. Maybe they will at some point. But right now, those passing lessons that he's getting from Tim Tebow, they haven't clicked in yet. They haven't clicked in yet is all I'm saying. The number two reason that Peyton Manning is struggling. You saw in the Oakland Raider game, when they were going to bring out Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler got all excited, the backup quarterback here in Denver ran over, grabbed his helmet, and then he saw Peyton go out on the field. Anyways, maybe he's just trying to give backup Brock Osweiler some hope because Osweiler doesn't get a play. And I don't think it's just on game day. I don't think Peyton even lets him play in practice. I kind of wonder if he even lets him play like on, you know, Madden, you know, on his PlayStation or whatever. I think Peyton Manning just butts in and takes over the controller. I think he's trying to give Brock Osweiler just a little hope. Maybe this is the week. I finally get to play a little bit. And the number one reason that Peyton Manning is struggling right now the last few weeks, we've all seen the commercials. Nationwide is on your side. Chicken parm, you taste so good. The number one reason, Peyton has a noodle arm. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know. Hey, thank you so much for listening to the debut podcast of the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. We appreciate it so much. Let me ask you to do one thing for me. Please go to iTunes, download the podcast there, give us a 5-star rating, give it a review. Make it a nice review. Say how much you love it. You know, the thing that about that really does help us is if you give us the review, it actually does put us on the trending list. It gets us on the hot new podcast coming out. So if you can go on iTunes, give us that great review, give us the 5-star rating, we would appreciate it so much. As usual, like we do every week, I got to thank JSP. Could not do this without you. Thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. I will see you all next Wednesday. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week.